Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Sports Ethos Bulls Show. I am your host, Mr. Keith Cork, here with my good buddy, fellow Bulls fan, and fellow Illinoisan, Trey Hill. Trey, I have to kind of apologize to our listeners a little bit here. We kind of sprung it on them that we were taking the show over from Greg over there. Who, like I said, if he wants to get on the show or be involved or even put out his own show, is totally fine under the Sports Ethos moniker. It's not going to bother me at all. But we did take it over a little bit. He's been a little busy, so we just decided, hey, we want to put shows about the Bulls. We were doing bold statements, bold predictions, and we're just kind of doing a little bit of a pivot here to talking just straight Bulls because we were talking too much Bulls already. Anyways, on our other show. And, man, I'm excited. I apologize for our listeners out there because I didn't really give a full explanation of that. So today, guys, this show right now, Trey and I, we're going to introduce ourselves to you. We're going to show you why we deserve to talk to you about the Bulls, why you got to listen to us about the Bulls. Trey, are you ready, man?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
I'm excited, man. I, like you said, you know, we were talking a little bit before we got on here. I could BS Bulls for about 7 hours if we had to. We don't have an agenda for today. We usually have agendas for the show. I've been so super busy with catching up because of all the traveling I did for the holidays. I didn't have a chance to put anything together, but we do have some exciting stuff to talk to you about. But I think first and foremost, what we have to do is we have to introduce ourselves. So yes, I'm Keith. Just to kind of give you my backstory. As far as myself and Bulls fandom goes, you know, I've been a Bulls fan since basically the second three-peat. I was a little young during the first three-peat. I mean, it was on TV. My whole family back in Illinois, back where I was from. I'm from, if you know where Elgin is, which is about, 30, 45 minutes west of Chicago. If you go even further west of that to the boonies, to the farmland, that's originally where I'm from, which is actually Burlington, Illinois. But even back then, even out in the boonies where we had, you know, the old school TV with the rabbit ears and you only got channels 2, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 32 and 50, we would all huddle around the TV for Bulls basketball when Michael Jordan was playing because it was the best show on earth. There's nothing nothing could beat it. So, you know, I would ask you, Trey, where did you start becoming a Bulls fan? But that's a given. I mean, 99% of the people are going to say Michael Jordan, 90 Chicago Bulls. That's where you became a Bulls fan. I'm sure it is. Same for me. So instead, I'm going to ask you just to give me your Bulls story. So tell me a little bit about your fandom. You know, how long you've been following the team, all that good stuff. I'll let you just freely talk about it.
You say that, but it's funny. My earliest memories of basketball, I vaguely remember the 98 title right before Jordan retired. But my dad, my family, they weren't basketball fans growing up, and he always claimed the TV. So I didn't really get to enjoy any of Jordan. But being from Illinois, we were raised to be, you know, Illini fans. We were raised to love the Chicago Bears. That was my dad's team. So I had this real loyalty to anything that was Illinois related. And so the first team I really remember following is the team that was like the worst team we ever had. Just that team after Jordan. That's the first team I was ever invested in. And so while I obviously loved Jordan as just, you know, like the idea of him in terms of just concept of knowledge, everything I know about Jordan is stuff I've went back and rewatched. So for me, like the first group I remember loving are like those Kirk Heinrich, Lou Alding, Ben Gordon teams. And so yeah. like that those were the first good teams. I rode with the bad ones, but
yeah,
they're not nearly as much fun to talk about.
Yeah, that's not too far off. I mean, honestly, like I say, I you know, obviously, like I said, we huddled around the TV and watched Michael Jordan, but I wasn't really old enough to really understand basketball. When I started actually getting into basketball and playing, and I played at the high school at the varsity level for all four seasons. And I was a starter, and then I was benched, and then I basically got out of the fell out of the rotation. I wasn't that great of a basketball player. We can go over that a little bit more, but yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I wasn't really old enough to really understand what was going on until it was like those really terrible teams where like Dickie Simpkins was like dribbling the ball at the court, and like we had Corey Benjamin, and we had Andrew Lang, and we had Elton Brand was like the big steal because we got him, and he ended up being
and then we got rid of him.
Yeah. We ended up trading him. It was a real, real bummer to have to watch those games and listen to those games because I wanted them so badly for them to win. I just believed in my heart that the Bulls were going to win basketball games because that's all I knew when I was a little kid. It was the Bulls win basketball games. It was like a given. And then, like you said, those terrible teams, it just didn't work out that way. But so it's very similar for me. Like I said, you know, I did play basketball in high school and middle school. I was a pretty good player when I was younger because I'm about 5'8 and a half, 5'8 and three quarters on a good day. I was at size when I was in like fifth and sixth grade. So I played center. And then all of a sudden, all these other guys, you know, shot up around me. And it's like, now I have to play guard and dribble the basketball. And I wasn't so good at that part. Shooting the basketball, I was decent at. I made all conference one year because I did shoot the basketball, like, I don't know, something like 45% from the three-point line for one season. And then I lost it. You know, it's just like, and you look at Duncan Robinson in the NBA now, like it happens to even the best shooters in the NBA. So I don't feel too bad. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I never really was that great. So it's okay. But I did get to play against Jeffrey Jordan, which is Michael Jordan's son. That was actually before high school. That was, I believe, in middle school. I went to the five-star basketball camp, and he was at that camp, and so was Marcus Jordan, which is his younger kid. And, Jeffrey Jordan got into a game with me and blocked my shot, and it was a clean block, and the ref called a foul. So you know what? I'm going to take my wins. I'm going to take my W's. It wasn't a foul. I know it. I told him on the court at that time. I got two free throws though off of a Jordan. So that's my claim to fame when it comes to playing. But you played a little bit of basketball, didn't you, Trey?
I mean, I did nothing even like what you did. I was just a backup in high school to a team that was pretty decent. I'm 6'3", 6'4" in shoes, so I had a little bit of height to me. That was about all I had. And you said to come with a Bulls story. I don't have anything like that. But I was able to – I moved to an area the year that Rose won MVP. I moved to an area specifically so I could get the package where I could get the Bulls games. And that was the first year I was able to watch all 82 Bulls games. And I just thought – I love the fact that it lined up perfectly with that season. So that's just something I always remember fondly. Because Rose is my personal favorite Bull ever. I know most people say Jordan, but like he's just my dude. He's also from Illinois, you know, so that always holds a special place in my heart. Same with Io now. But that was my Bull story I had to come with, was the stars aligning for my first 82-game season being that one.
People always ask, you know, it's like, where were you when the towers collapsed? Where were you when Derrick Rose tore his ACL in the playoffs against the 76ers? What were you doing?
I was sitting on my couch, just sad.
Yeah.
Like, I even remember looking over at my friend and saying, why is he still in there? Because I had been a big Thibs needs to like give these guys a break. We need them to be fresh in the playoffs. Like I'd been ranting and raving about it all year. So like I was already frustrated before he got hurt. And I know with the way he played, he was so explosive and so herky jerky. He was always going to get hurt. Like I understand that, but I just feel like he was definitely pushed to the limit. And I remember just sitting there, and I had said something before, and I just sat like with my head in my hands, just distraught.
Right. It was a rough It was a rough time. I do recall very specifically that when it happened. And it was kind of weird because obviously it was a playoff game, so it was kind of a big game. At the time, I was living with three other dudes in a house that all were into basketball. We would basically watch every Bulls game together, or we play 2K. Like we just, you know, basketball. We play basketball at the local park or whatever. It was just basketball like 24/7. That was like basically our bonding thing, right? And for whatever reason, it was only me and my now wife at that time. It was my girlfriend, like sitting on the couch watching this game. And I just remember I just like put my head in her lap and I literally cried. There were tears. I'm not too manly to admit that, you know, I did cry for another man's just a very unfortunate event. It was really unfortunate. And I agree with you. I was saying the same thing. Obviously my wife, she doesn't really care that much about basketball, but I was telling her, you know, the same thing. I was like, why is he in there? We're up. Now the Sixers were making a bit of a run in that game. I know my best friend has pushed back on me a little bit on that. He's like, hey, they're making a run. And I did look at that box score. And it's a lot closer than I remembered it. But at the same time, man, it's like, I wonder what could have been if Tibbs would have pulled those guys, for that last, I think it was like four or five minutes of the game. But yeah, it was a sad time. That's a sad time. But yeah, I mean, there were worse times before that, right? There was all those terrible teams. I'm actually friends with Marcus Fizer on LinkedIn. So maybe I can reach out to him there and get him on the show. That would be absolutely incredible. That was one guy that I kind of liked a lot. Not after
how we've been talking about those teams.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like he always felt like he never got the opportunity he deserved. I kind of felt that way, too. I thought he was kind of a skilled player, but I don't know. I'm probably blowing him up too much in my mind because he did go overseas and win. I think he won some championships, actually, overseas. I was looking him up recently. Looking up all those guys, I think Corey Benjamin was in, like, some legal trouble. So, but, yeah, I've written for sites like FanSided. So if you know Pippen Ain't Easy. That's a Bulls site. I did write for them for a little while, and then I also wrote for their Wizards program or site. But obviously, I'm a huge Bulls fan. I watch all NBA. I watch like two or three games a night, but I don't miss a single Bulls game. If I can't watch it, I'll listen to it on the radio, and I'll watch it later. That's why I love league passes, because you can rewatch games. I'm a stay-at-home dad during the day, so it's something that I can pop on the TV while I'm playing with toys with my two-year-old. And I'm not obviously watching as intently as I want to, but I'm still watching some basketball. I still catch those games. So guys, you know, every single game that we'll be watching, Mondays and Wednesdays I won't be available, but we will have a game recap for you. If it's just me that has to hop on, or if it's Trey and myself, which I hope it will be, then we'll hop on and give you some thoughts, just like we did for that Brooklyn Nets game. But yeah, this season, man, Trey, it's night and day compared to what we've been used to so far as Bulls fans. So
AK and Eversley have put this team together in less than 2 years. And I know the previous regime brought in Zach, but they gave us no indication that they could do anything. And to just see competent management combined with competent coaching, I've never been this hopeful as a Bulls fan. Even when, you know, we had Rose and Ding and Noah, I had those reservations because of the front office. And where we're at now, I think, is just – it's the best place I think I've been as a Chicago Bulls fan.
It's exciting. And they've obviously started way hotter than even you or I would have anticipated. We had our show and we were talking about – preseason win totals, and you know, we had them in that 45-47 win valley, which we felt we were being a little bit homerish. I think at least I did, having them that high.
I actually had them at 48 wins before that show started, and I bumped it down to 47 because I told myself I was being too much of a homer.
Yeah, but we did watch. I mean, we watched, like you said, I watched every single Bulls game. I watched all the preseason. I watched all the summer league games. And just it's different. And I tried to explain this to one of my friends because he said, you know, basically he was like, oh, it's preseason, calm down. And he's into basketball. He watches a lot of basketball. But you have to be into it at a totally different level to really see this stuff. And what I saw on the floor was, every single action in the game just looked different. It looked snappier. The way that the teams had to guard us because we had so many different weapons just looked different. So it opened up some – like Zach LaVine's never had – another all-star until they got Vucevic, and now they've got Vucevic, they've got DeMar DeRozan, and arguably, I mean, Lonzo Ball, I mean, if he was on another team, he could be an all-star. He's an all-star level talent, in my opinion. So I hope you, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. What it really is for me is we saw in the preseason how the pieces fit together. We saw the spacing that this team was going to have with having Vucevic out there and having, you know, Ball out there spacing the floor, Zach being able to shoot like he can, Patrick Williams being good from three before he went out, and now Caruso's in, who's also shooting, I think, 33% from three, which, you know, isn't great, but I bet he shoots better from the corners. I just don't have those pulled up. The playmaking, though, I think has been the thing that's really unlocked this team, because when DeMar or Zach get doubled, they can, when they get the ball out and then it's that 4-on-3 break, like that 4-on-3 mini break, we have guys like Lonzo Ball who can make a great pass to an open shooter. Or Vucevic has also shown that he can make great passes, like from both inside the post and even creating kind of at the elbow. It all just fits together for me. And I think DeRozan is getting to show the growth he had in San Antonio, playing on a talented team instead of kind of playing on a subpar team.
I think what struck me about this team, and even in preseason, was just their defense. And, you know, people were saying that was the first critique that people had about the Bulls team, was they aren't going to be great defensively. They've got Vooch, who's a turnstile on defense. That's not the case. I mean, the guy anchored one of the top defenses in Orlando for years. But people were saying that's what the common narrative was in sports media and ESPN and everything like that. So what struck me when I first got to see, you know, all the pieces together, like you said, is that their defense is just tremendous, like, especially the perimeter defense. When Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso are on the floor together, they just create turnovers. And that's just so valuable for this team, because and you brought it up before, because not only good defense also involves playing good offense. If you have good offense and you make a shot, it's way easier for you to get back and set up your defense. So it's all about the flow of the game and controlling that flow of the game. And the Bulls do a fantastic job at that. They score efficiently, which helps them get back on defense. And then on defense, they have defense that actually generates turnovers, that generates offense, which is just incredible to me, because it's not something that I'm used to seeing. I mean, we saw Thibodeau when he coached our team. Obviously, we had great defensive schemes, but that's a little bit different. It wasn't necessarily about creating turnovers. It was about basically guiding them to certain shots. And the whole NBA uses it now. Thibodeau's an architect that, you know, the whole NBA just totally overloads one side and, you know, forces that shot that you want them to take, which, you know, was the mid-range long twos. And it's just something, you know, it was good defense, but it wasn't something that was exciting to watch, because it wasn't something that generated necessarily turnovers and fast break points. And I haven't looked at the stats, but I would almost guarantee that the Bulls are near the top of the league in that stat. I'm going to look it up right now. But do you agree? I mean, what do you think about the defense this season?
Oh, the defense has been great. When Lonzo really amps up the pressure and Caruso's out there, they create so much havoc and so much disruption on the perimeter players. And the game is so perimeter oriented with the pick and roll and everything. It's great to watch the chaos. You saw early against Brooklyn, it kind of bit, you know, it kind of came back to bite them. That aggressiveness kind of they would come out, be aggressive, and then the back end would have to rotate. And Vucevic, he tries hard. He stays in position. Like you said, he's not a turnstile, but he is big, and it takes him a second for his rotations. And they gave up some open threes in the corner early against Brooklyn. And so they adjusted their pressure up front. But whenever they get the chance to really, like, put the clamps on, like when Derek Jones Jr. is playing the five, and they can just really attack, it's a good defense makes easy offense, and the Bulls are great in transition.
Yeah, I was going to say the problem, but it's not necessarily, that's a misnomer. It's not the problem with Vucevic. It's the limitation with Vucevic, is that he can really only play drop coverage. And the limitation with that last season was that you had also Lauri Markkanen in the lineup. And, you know, I love,
I think he can switch on like twos and up. Like the really small point guards, we definitely I don't want to see him switching some, but I don't think you have to go full Rudy Gobert, you know, don't you ever come out and double style with him at least.
It just seems like, because he, like for instance in that Nets game when he dropped and you know Harden had that like look at him for 3 seconds and then shoot the three in the first quarter, like it just seems like that's often what he does. There are times when he's better at it, and there are times also when he closes out on 3-point shooters and it's not the best and people just go around him or he commits a foul. So I'm not calling him an incredible elite defender, but he's definitely not a net negative if you get him in the right positions, if you have the right personnel around him, which is what the Bulls did. And it's a real bummer that they lost Patrick Williams, because Patrick Williams was a huge part of that plan, because Patrick Williams is that future, you know, current modern NBA wing that can guard 1 through 5. And losing him and not having that switchable defense is a huge, huge loss. But Javonte Green's done a great job. I feel like you know, Derek Jones Jr. I feel like has done even better in terms of that aspect of it on the defensive side. So I do hope to see him quite a bit more now that Javonte's in the health and safety protocols. And obviously Alex Caruso has stepped in and played the four and been totally fine. And that's just the way the NBA is now. I mean, you've got, you know, at least four guys on the floor that can switch everything. So again, this is Eversley and Arturas have done a fantastic job just assembling this roster and getting the right personnel. And by the way, before I let you go, the points off turnovers, the Bulls are fourth in the NBA. So they are definitely up there. And then fast break points are seventh in the NBA. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna bring another stat for you to hammer home the point. So, on points per 100 possessions right now, Chicago ranks 8th, 107.1, which I imagine that would probably be a couple spots higher because the separation is less than a point to 6th. I think Patrick Williams would be worth that. And if the Bulls can continue to get stops and then to get out in transition, because Lonzo Ball is great at throwing those, you know, long full court transition passes to get the break running. And if Zach gets ahead of steam, we've seen what he can do all year. I just love how well the team has come together, because so often, every offseason, you know, every fan base can talk to themselves into saying, oh, well, this is going to be our year. You know, 2/3 of the NBA can do that. And this year, as Bulls fans, we caught a lot of flack for being as optimistic as we were, and to just see it all come together is just, it's been very rewarding.
I've been optimistic and wrong in the past. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm a fan at heart. I'm still a fanatic and, you know, I get carried away at times. So I think, you know, I want to say it was like a couple seasons. Last season, I wasn't that excited. I was more excited probably for Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler and Rajon Rondo than most people were. I still maintain that wasn't a terrible experiment. In the playoffs, they were doing fantastic until Rondo broke his hand. So, you know, I don't think it was necessarily the worst thing in the world, but it did kind of waste a year or two. So I do see people's points, you know, when they said that. Well, but speaking of that, what's a terrible Bulls take you've had, or what's your Bulls, your worst Bulls take in your memory here that you've had that hasn't come to fruition?
That Dougie McBuckets was worth it. I thought he was going to come in, and I thought he was going to have a Kyle Korver type, you know, why am I drawing the blank? Joe Harris, you know, a Duncan Robinson type role. I thought he was going to unlock the team, and it never happened.
Yeah. I mean, he's popping off a little bit in San Antonio. What really got me with that is that Garpax was like scouting him for like, it feels like 7 years. Like they were scouting him for like every year that he was in college, and like even before that, I feel like. And then they had him like basically chosen before the draft even happened. So I was like, okay, well, this is their guy. So obviously they know what they're doing. You can say what you want about Garpax. And I think it was time for them to leave. And I think everyone was kind of fed up with them. But they had their moments. I mean, they got Jimmy Butler late in the draft. They had some good draft picks, right?
I thought of another one that's rough.
Okay.
I groaned when they drafted Joakim Noah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. And I was so wrong on that.
He's like he burned so bright for like 3 or 4 seasons, and then he just had a short time in his peak. He didn't have like a short career. I think he ended up playing like 11 or 12 seasons, which is fine. It's a pretty normal length, you know, even a little bit long. But his peak was pretty short. But yeah, at his peak, he was really good.
I think he's severely underrated in terms of when we look back on players, because he was what, ranked 4th in MVP voting that one year, because he got to show what he could do, and he got to show how he could run an offense through the post, something that wasn't really being done a whole lot back then. And imagine it. I love Derrick Rose. He was obviously the guy that should have had the ball, but Joakim Noah could have, you know, ran the offense through him and had multiple years like that MVP kind of season if he would have had that kind of usage and been that kind of focus. And so I think it just shows how much of a team player he was, how tight him and Derek were. I heard him on the Zach Lowe podcast just go into that, and I love Joakim Noah, and I hate to admit that I groaned when they drafted him.
Well, speaking of guys running, you know, offense out of the post, we've got a pretty good one in the next game here with the Denver Nuggets coming up tomorrow. Nikola Jokic obviously is the guy I'm talking about. Interesting fun fact, I was actually in the building for his second ever career triple-double, which was kind of interesting. I had no idea who this guy was. Like, I'm an NBA fan. At that point, I wasn't watching every single team. I was just watching the Bulls. So I didn't really know who Nikola Jokic was. But, you know, I get here and there's this whole section. I'm in the 300 level section because let's face it, I'm a broke ass biatch. You know, there's a whole section beside me that's full of Serbians, all chanting the whole game, Nikola Jokic, Nikola Jokic. And I'm like, who the this tall, skinny white
this guy?
Yeah. And he drops a triple-double, and they beat the Bulls. And that was, during the Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo years. So they were decent. They weren't great, but they were decent. And they beat us, and I was like, what? And now I know who Nikola Jokic is, because he just destroyed us. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Any thoughts about what's coming up here and what the Bulls have to do to win this one?
I think they've got a pretty good chance. They're both teams will have a day off in between, so they'll both be coming in fresh. But fresh for the Nuggets means no Jamal Murray and no Michael Porter Jr. still. I think Vucevic is a great guy to play defense on Jokic, because they're about the same speed level. You know what I mean? And so I'm confident in the defensive aspect of it. And I like our team better than the Nuggets team. I think we match up pretty well with them overall, as well as you can match up with the Nuggets. But when you play Jokic, you want to have a legit 7-footer out there against him, because otherwise he's just going to be looking over you and picking you apart with those passing lanes.
Yeah, I think we match up well with them. They're also not playing super well right now. So I think, you know, I think it's going to be something. And the Bulls are favored here by a few points, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. We actually were planning on doing some wagers, but there's no wagers out right now, but we'll talk about that at the end. But yeah, I think the Bulls have to be favored in this one. They're just the better team right now. The Nuggets are, I think, what, 10-11? They're like slightly under 500, maybe just exactly 500, somewhere around there. So they're not doing so hot at the moment. They're relying on Monty Morris and Will Barton to kind of carry load, and Jeff Green. That doesn't scare me. I think the Bulls win this one. I think it's possible that Jokic just absolutely goes off and they win. But I don't think it's probable in the least bit. But hey, guys, we're dropping knowledge about the Bulls here. But if you want knowledge about everything else, be it fantasy sports or whatever, you guys need to go get the Sports Ethos 360 subscription. It's just $19.99 a month right now, which is an absolute steal. The Sports Ethos 360 Pass is the ultimate Sports Ethos experience for the fan that wants to win everything. And yes, I mean everything, guys. Sports Ethos 360 subscription includes our Fantasy Pass, Wager Pass, and DFS Pass. So visit sportsethos.com to get started and get winning. I think, again, it's going to be something where it's probable the Bulls win. What do you think? What's your guess for the final score here from this upcoming game?
Ooh, final score guess? 106-98.
Oh, that's kind of low. It's kind of low. I'm going to go 110 to 102. Bulls, obviously. So I'll go a little higher. Same here. Yeah. Let's see. They do have the total for points at 214. So, yeah, I mean, going back, though, so here's a fun story. When I was playing a lot of basketball and watching the Bulls and all that kind of stuff, I think the guy I looked up to the most was Mr. Captain Kirk Heinrich. And I'd love to see this guy involved with the Bulls organization again. I think he's coaching basketball at like a high school somewhere or something, if I recall correctly.
Does Caruso ever give you Kirk vibes?
I think that Caruso is a more talented player than Kirk Heinrich is.
I think he's a better Kirk Heinrich. I think Kirk Heinrich gave that same kind of effort and kind of was that same kind of defensive leader in a way on the perimeter. But I think Caruso is just a better Kirk. Sorry to interrupt. I just had never really thought about that until just now, and I wanted to spit it out.
No, I think, Caruso, I mean, Caruso gives me those vibes and the fact that, like, I want it, like, the guy just gives 100% at all times and there's never any quit. And he is kind of the spark plug and kind of the heart and soul of the team. I think Kirk was, especially for those baby Bulls. Obviously, Joakim Noah came in and became that guy for the Bulls when we started to get really good. And obviously, Kirk had to take a back seat because Derrick Rose played the same position and was way better. So, you know. Kirk kind of lost his stance with that, but during that baby bull era with Ben Gordon and all those guys, I'm forgetting a lot of names, obviously Kirk Heinrich, but he was that guy that just brought it every single night, especially on the defensive end. I can see the comparison there, but I do think Caruso. I think Caruso is definitely a better shooter. And I know it's weird because I want to say Kirk is still the or he just got overtaken maybe by, for most threes as a Bull. I got to look that up now, too.
Well, while you look that up,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I was getting ready to ask you what you're looking forward to coming up for the Bulls. So while you look that up, after this Denver game, the Bulls play Cleveland on December 8th. That starts a two-week stretch where it's going to be the Bulls getting to go against like all of these great rookies that I want to watch. So you've got Mobley with Cleveland, December 8th. And then we play Miami. They don't really have one. But December 14th, Cade Cunningham and the Pistons. The 16th, Scotty Barnes in Toronto. The 20th, we play Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün in Houston. The 22nd, we've got Scotty Barnes again. It's just a two-week stretch of great rookies to watch while you're also watching the Bulls games.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I'm looking for. I love all those guys too. Obviously, like you said, I watch more than just the Bulls these days, but especially Evan Mobley. I'm excited to see that guy in action and see that Cavs team in action. I haven't watched enough of them. They continue to surprise. They beat the spread again tonight. They were playing. Oh gosh, who did they play tonight? Now I'm losing it. They're playing Utah. Yeah.
They lost by one.
They lost by one. Yeah. So
I've been
pretty impressive
on what they've been doing. I went on one of the shows. I can't even remember the name of it, and that's terrible of me. But we ranked the coaches. And
Bird Rights.
That was it. Right, because I was just listening to his other podcast, so I went on the Bird Rights podcast, and we were ranking coaches, and I had Bickerstaff, I think 16th or 17th, pretty high, and it was because I really liked this three big lineup and how he was able to kind of use sprinkling in the zone matchups to throw off offenses, like the Bulls have seen time and time again with Zach and DeMar getting doubled, and you know kind of kicking it out to someone that's not there or, you know, throwing a pass that gets tipped. And the Cleveland's just done an excellent job of playing different and forcing teams to adapt to their style.
So I agree. But here I was looking up the all-time leaders, and Kirk Heinrich is still at the top of this list. He's made 1,049 three-pointers as a Chicago Bull. Can you guess? First of all, can you guess who's second on that list? Can you guess the name of who's second? Sorry, you're muted, I think. Go ahead.
Ben Gordon.
Yep, it is Ben Gordon. Now, can you guess? So Kirk's at 1,049. How many do you think Ben Gordon had?
830.
770. So that's a gap of nearly 300. It's about 250 threes short of him, if I'm doing math correctly. I think so. I might maybe 260. Yeah. And Zach LaVine is fourth on this list at 614. Now, of course, Kirk did play with the Bulls for 11 seasons. He played for most of his career. He went to the Hawks, and then he went to where was it? It was like Orlando or something like that. And then he came back to the Bulls for a few seasons. But most of his playing career was in the Bulls. So 11 seasons. Zach's only been with the Bulls for 5 seasons. So that's less than half. And if he signs that max deal that we're all talking about, I think he's got a really good shot of overtaking Mr. Kirk Heinrich there. Do you think he's going to sign that max deal with us?
There is no doubt in my mind that he is signing the max deal. It is 100% stamped done.
Kirk only shot 37.5% or 37.6% on those three pointers. So it's decent. That's pretty good, actually, I guess. 37.6. I want to say like the average
that is good, especially for the fact that he played in an era that didn't focus on it as much. So I feel like that 37 has a little more weight than a 37 today, even.
So it's pretty decent. It's not bad. I'll take it. Let's see. Zach, 614. Hold on. Let me do some math here. 614. And he shot 1584. So let's see. What do we got? What do we got there? 38.8%. So a whole percentage point better. And I think he'll definitely catch him. But yeah, I agree with you, man. I think all the moves in this past offseason, and that was one thing I was trying to tell people, is that I don't think it's really even about this season. I think even the front office is surprised at the success they've had this early with this group, because I think the plan ultimately was just to put these pieces around Zach, get him into the playoffs, show the world what Zach LaVine is about, because Zach LaVine is yet to play in the playoffs, which is just insanity. This guy is just too good. And once that's done, then he signs the dotted line. I think he will get the max deal. I think he absolutely deserves the max deal. I think even though DeMar DeRozan has better numbers and is often the guy that gets the ball down the stretch in the fourth quarter, I don't think there's any stretch of the imagination to say this is still Zach LaVine's team. He's still the guy that does the thing that makes your jaw drop, and he's still the guy that goes out and gets a bucket when you absolutely need to stop something. I view him like, it's kind of like a Devin Booker situation, right? Like Devin Booker is still that dude on that team, but he's got so many other pieces around him, but he doesn't have to do it constantly night in and night out, right?
Yeah, he's like a better Devin Booker, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Here's a funny thing, and this is when I was working with the Washington Wizards website. I was talking to some people there, and I wrote an article about who would you rather have on your team to start your team, basically. Would you rather have Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine? And at that time, and that was 2 seasons ago, at that time, I gave the edge to Bradley Beal. But I said, in a few seasons, we'll have to revisit this, because I think Zach LaVine has the higher ceiling. I think he's going to be a better player eventually. Do you think he's done that? Do you think he's better than Bradley Beal now?
I do. I think I don't even know that I would have said it last season. I probably would have wanted to, but this season, I think I can say that with pretty good confidence, that I would easily take Zach as the guy who I would want to start a franchise with over Beal. I think he's the better player. I think having the rest of this team has allowed him to shine more on defense. I think his defense has really stepped up this year, which has been a big deal for me. And DeMar is the guy who has the ball a lot. But there are often times where when the clock's running down, DeMar will throw it to Zach because he knows that he's that real three-level scorer. And with 5 seconds on the clock, it doesn't matter where he's at. He's going to get a good shot.
I mean, either of those guys can get their shot. I don't think there's any argument about that. But, yeah, I think Zach can do it from more space on the floor. So that does make him more the dude, because, like you said, he can score from all three levels. who's going to end up with the most dunks. There was a Dunkin' Donuts promo they were doing this month on Twitter. I saw who's going to have the most dunks this month for the Chicago Bulls. And literally the video that they attached to it was like just all videos of Zach LaVine dunking the ball. And he does. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I did not mean that as a slight against DeRozan. What I love about his game is he will attack the guy guarding him with like 9 seconds left on the shot clock. So he's got 4 seconds where he hits the guy with one or two moves, tries to get a quality shot. And if his guy plays really good defense and he knows I'm going to have to take a heavily contested shot, he realizes, oh, I can just kick it out to Zach and he's going to get a better shot than me taking this heavily contested shot. And the offense just flows so well because they play so well together. They both know that they're going to get their shots. Or if Zach doesn't get the majority of the, you know, if he doesn't get any shots down the fourth quarter and DeMar's taking all of them, that's because DeMar's getting the better shot. And they're playing for the team. They're not playing for themselves. It's just great to watch.
Yeah, and I'm trying to look up right now because I feel like my gut tells me that Zach is taking it to the bucket more this year than he did last year. I felt like he settled a bit for outside jump shots, which wasn't a bad thing because he ended up hitting it at such like an incredible rate, especially for a little while there. He was like on a historic pace for a minute. But I feel like he's taking it more to the rack now, and he's understanding that that's what he needs to do when the going gets tough, you know, when people are really crowding him on the defensive end, he needs to go to the basket and get to the line. I mean, get to the line and shoot free throws, right?
Well, I hate to burst your bubble.
Am I wrong?
He's actually, this year he's 31% of his shots are coming at the rim, whereas last year it was 39, the year before that 44, then 48. So he's not actually shooting as much at the rim. He's taking 10%. Those shots are basically going to the mid-range. He's learning from DeMar is really where it's at. I think they've really here it is. Even he's in the 90th percentile on long mid-range shots. So outside of 14 feet, that 14 feet out to the three-point line is where his shots have started to really flood in this year.
I'm looking at his free throw attempts too, and yeah, that doesn't. But it's kind of weird because this season everyone's down across the board in free throw attempts because of the rule change. So I feel like if the rules were the same here, it'd be even higher than what it is. The most free throw attempts he's had in his career in a season is 6 free throw attempts a game. He's at 4.8 right now. But I feel like if the rules were the same here, he might be a little over 6 even. So I think he's getting
here's another stat for you to help back that up. This is from Cleaning the Glass. I'll give them the credit. The stat is floor foul percentage. How many non-shooting fouls did the player draw per team play? So basically, how many times are guys just hacking Zach? How many times is he just getting fouls? He's in the 94th percentile and 2.4%. And he's also getting fouled on 8.8% of his shots, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's in the 73rd percentile in the league. So he is definitely getting fouled at a very high rate compared to the rest of the league. So like you said, the rule changes make it seem like he's not getting as many calls as he should. But when you compare it to the rest of the league, Zach's been pretty elite in drawing fouls.
My big gripe with Zach, because I was a big Jimmy Butler fan, obviously. I mean, I just love the guy. He was emblematic of everything Chicago is: hardworking, hard nose, doesn't do things the way that, you know, people want him to do things. He's not, you know, the league now is all three pointers and dunks, and Jimmy's more of a head down, go to the basket, just bat out of hell. If I'm gonna get hit, it's gonna happen. I'm gonna still score, and I love the heck out of that. I wish him all the best, obviously, in Miami. But the big gripe I had with Zach getting him, and I understood the move at the time, so I wasn't like totally devastated. But I just didn't feel like he was just an efficient scorer, right? I felt like he was more of a volume scorer in Minnesota, and I think the numbers do back me up on that. But man, this guy has just—he's grown every single year. He's been in the NBA, or with Chicago, I should say, but in the NBA too. But yeah, he's an efficient scorer now. And the other gripe I had was that he didn't have great playmaking ability or, you know, floor vision when it came to teams doubling him and really crowding him and taking the ball out of his hands. He couldn't adjust to that. Now I think he's just infinitely better. This guy, I mean, this kid's just gotten so much better. He's, you know, he's only 26 years old. I think he's still got a good four or five years in his prime. And yeah, he's gotten better at every single aspect of the game. So I'm really impressed with this guy. I hope he gets the max deal. I mean, did you see the same thing? It looks like you're giving me a thumbs up. So I'm guessing you probably did.
Yeah. His efficiency has just risen since he got his first year in Chicago. It was pretty low. He only played the 24 games and he had one outlier year in Minnesota where it was, but it's just been trending higher and higher in terms of his offensive efficiency. I don't see a world where he doesn't get the max and they're not signing it literally the second they can.
Yeah, I don't. I think the holdout is just strictly because, you know, this is just what you do to try to get the maximum money. I don't know. It's not really even a holdout. It's just a matter of, you know, let's wait until it's up. I mean, I don't think Zach's at all upset with the organization. The only thing that would really be a bummer is an injury. Obviously, I hate to put that out there, but you know, it can happen. He's already had a major injury in his career, recovered from it wonderfully. Awesomely, obviously.
I think they would still resign. I think they'd still sign him, though, to be honest.
After another major, like if it was another major knee injury, I don't know. What do you think? You think so?
I mean, if it was a knee, I'd be more worried about an Achilles. But I think with the way this team is built and the way the salary cap is, if you don't sign him, then what, you're not going to have the money to replace him. It would literally be like just losing the asset. So to me, they might not get the max out of him if he suffers, you know, something terrible. But I think barring that, there's no way he's not getting signed immediately. And with the way the CBA works, he would have had, if Zach would have signed the contract last offseason, the extension, it would have cost him I think an 8% raise, basically. So waiting a year was just kind of a no-brainer for him, given the market. There's not really a whole lot of free agents out there, and there's going to be some teams with cap room. So to me, I think it's a win-win situation for Zach when it comes to the free agent market, and I think the Bulls will basically kind of be at his mercy.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, you said it way more eloquently than I did. But yeah, I think it's just a smart financial move for him. He's going to get his maximum money out of that situation. So I don't think he's unhappy in any sense of the word. So don't buy any of those rumors out there. They're like, oh, they should trade Zach LaVine. That was happy. Remember when the season was about to start, they were like talking about how like, I don't know if he's going to sign. I don't know if, you know, he wants to be there. Why would he not want to be there after they assembled that team? But
I do remember hearing that, because the argument was the season's going to start. DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine are not going to be able to play together. And you know you've got DeMar for the next 3 years. What happens if Zach just leaves? You should trade him when you see that pairing isn't going to work. That was the narrative I heard from, you know, the negative people trying to talk down about this all-star pairing. I mean, they're both all-stars, I think.
Yep.
It's pretty much a lock.
Yeah, do you think they both make the all-star team then? For sure.
Yeah, I think they're both a lock.
Yeah, I think those two guys have to. I mean, I think Vooch is the guy that's really taken the backseat, and I think it's totally fine. I think he's totally fine with that also. But you were telling me, I mean, you were talking on the Nets episode about how he's still just filling that role, though. He's doing everything that he needs to do. And that makes me happy. And also, you know what else makes me happy, Trey, is that I'm totally in love with the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped. This package also comes with amazing liquid formulations to keep the boys fresh on and off the court. The Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner. It's time to keep your testes clean and ready for battle. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. We are Sports Ethos, but all of our promo codes are still HoopBall, I believe, which was our former name. So if there's any confusion there, that's what it's all about. But yeah, you were saying that he was basically, he's adjusted to his role, and he's kind of taken it's a backseat, but he's doing the things that he needs to do. So I hate that. It's always a perception thing more than it is an actual skill thing, because, you know, we see it all the time. Guys, go to a different situation and they just blow it up and they're just incredible. Vooch could average 25 points and 10 rebounds in this league. He did for years, right?
He did. His usage rate's down about 5%. He's went from like the 96th, 94th percentile down to 88th, which it's not a huge drop. I think Vucevic he's getting the numbers bear it out. He's getting almost as much usage, not quite as much, but his role is different. Like you said, he's here to facilitate for DeMar and for Zach. He's there to catch the pass and then to make another pass. And he's great at that because he is such an excellent passer. He's averaging 3.9 assists, the same as Zach. I love the fact that we've got DeMar at 4.1, Lonzo's at 5 even, 3.9 for Zach, 3.9 for Vooch, 4.1 for Caruso in terms of assists. The team just shares the ball so well, and the reason they're able to do that is because they have a center like Vucevic who can keep the ball moving, who can make those passes, and just have the offense continuously flow and just put pressure on those defenses until they break.
I love it, man. And, I think that there is going to be more depth added here also on the Bulls before the trade deadline comes and goes. I do think they're going to go out and get somebody because Patrick Williams was injured. And I know they qualified for a injury exception for him. He wasn't making a ton of money, but they should recoup some of that money. I believe they're going to have enough money to add another contract, and especially if they end up shipping somebody out that makes up any kind of money. So, I didn't have any time to put together a list. I think we're going to do that, though, probably next weekend, as we're going to go over just a list of guys you'd like to see the Bulls go after if they do add a body. I think you're probably in agreement with me here, but I think what they would need to add is they would need to add exactly what Patrick Williams was doing, a 3-4 hybrid kind of guy that's able to guard basically 1 through 5, like basically an Aaron Gordon. I'll throw that name out there. He's making a lot of money, though, so probably not him. I'm looking at a Jeremy Grant, who's also making a lot of money, so I don't know how that would work exactly. I'd have to run it through the trade machine. But guys like that, I mean, are there any guys off the top of your head that pop off besides those two that would be nice to have on the Bulls?
No, you stole both of them.
I stole them. I'm sorry.
That I had rude. Just, right off the top of my head. But no, that's the kind of role that they need. Nobody comes to mind. If you could get a Sabonis from Indiana who could play the five, I think Derek Jones Jr. has shown he can play the five perfectly fine, but he also can excel at the four. And, so I think Sabonis could play, if he was someone that was available, I wouldn't mind having him because he also is such a great passer. He would be able to help the offense flow just as well. That's really the only
other thing. I don't think Indiana's going to part with that guy, though. I hesitate to call him special because I think he's an all-star. He was an all-star last season. But
I think Miles Turner is the guy that goes from that team.
Yeah, right.
If they decide they're going to pull the trigger on a trade, I think it's Miles Turner going somewhere. Hopefully, yeah, Golden State.
Oh man, that'd be incredible. Golden State. I wish we were doing the show back after that game. I would have had some choice words for my guy Steph Curry.
You are the biggest Steph Curry hater. I enjoy watching.
I enjoy watching him play. But like I said in my Twitter post, if it was the 80s and 90s, you do that little shimmy after you shoot that three. You have like Dennis Rodman or somebody coming after you. It wouldn't be like right when it happens. It'd be like the next play, boxing out for a rebound. All of a sudden, you're in the stands. That's kind of how I envisioned that going down. It's fine. It's a different world now, and I'm just an old fart that has had trouble adjusting to it. But it does kind of irk me to stuff like that. But obviously, you don't feel the same way.
I enjoy it. The shimmy doesn't really bother me. I like all of the stuff. I feel like they put so much effort into it. They put so much time into it. There's so much emotion going on in that. I would much rather them let it out like that rather than like yelling at the refs that's, I just enjoy it. I like the showmanship.
All right, so we do have the Nuggets coming up tomorrow, but let's take a look at the games that we have coming up. You already mentioned some of them. They got the Cavaliers, they've got the Heat, they've got the Pistons, the Raptors, Lakers. So those are the next six games there. I just rattled off for you. So outside of obviously tomorrow's game, we're looking forward to that. But are we looking forward to this Bulls Heat rematch here on December 11th? Did we beat them the first game? I can't remember now. I think so. Good question, right?
No, we lost to them by 3 points.
We lost them by 3 points. Okay, so it was a close game. I'm trying to call that game. Go ahead.
I'm not as excited about that one just because Bam's not around. The Cleveland game is really the one I want to watch. I think Cleveland is for real. Like I said earlier, they have the easiest schedule left in the league, and they're already pretty primed to be in playoff position. So I want to see how we handle matching up against them. I know we beat them earlier in the year, I believe.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Heat box score. I forgot about that game. I was in Illinois visiting family, but that was the game that Gabe Vincent went freaking 4 for 8 from three-pointers, and that kind of ticked me off because it was like Tyler Hero was out, so I was like, oh, we got a chance to win this one. And unfortunately, it was shut down, and they beat us. But, yeah, so Cleveland, go ahead.
I lied. We have not played Cleveland yet. So I'm excited to see how we match up against them. The Lauri Markkanen game coming back. I love seeing him succeed outside of Chicago. I love seeing Wendell Carter Jr. succeed outside of Chicago, but not against the Bulls. But I think Cleveland is a legit playoff team, and so they're at pretty full strength. I think it's going to be a good matchup, and I'm excited to see how we match up against all that size because we have Vucevic. But that's really about it. I know Bradley's a great backup, but in terms of battling 3 7-footers, that's a lot of size for this team to go up against.
Yeah, it should be interesting. That's a good one to look forward to. I agree. I do think, I'm still probably sleeping a little bit too much on the Cavs. I don't know. It's just hard for me to believe because they've been bad for so long. They're good, and they keep proving me wrong. So that should be a good one. That's coming up on Wednesday. Unfortunately, we might do a show if I get back and watch that show a little bit later, but we might not get a show out for that one, but that's okay. We will discuss it at some point. I am absolutely sure. I'm not really too excited about any of these other games. Maybe the Lakers on December 19th, if LeBron's playing and Westbrook's playing and Anthony Davis is playing, which, it's always a crapshoot if one of those three guys is going to sit. But that I might be really excited about that one. Good.
A little bit further down the road, we've got another home and home with Atlanta, December 27th and 29th at Atlanta, and then back to Chicago. I've really enjoyed those home and home games, kind of little mini series that teams have had. I am looking forward to that. We had one earlier in the year with Philadelphia. Almost one with Detroit. There was a New Orleans game sandwich, and I was thinking we'd had more than one, but yeah, we had it with Philadelphia, and now we're getting ready to have another one with Atlanta, so that'll be fun.
Well, all you listeners out there, the Bulls currently sit in second in the Eastern Conference. Oh my gosh, second through 24 games. We are like a quarter of the way through the season here, and we're just a half game out of first, which is just incredible. Beyond my wildest dreams. The Wizards have fallen off a little bit. They're now 14-10. I know they lost tonight. The Heat, they've been a little up and down. Now they don't have Bams. So they don't really scare me. The Bucks are obviously, they're going to keep climbing. I think they'll probably end up being the first seed again. Do you agree with that? Or do you think between the Nets and the Bucks, I think either of those teams, obviously, I think they're going to go 1-2. So I could see, could honestly see the Bulls being 3. What about you?
That's how I see it shaping out. Milwaukee's been on a tear since Middleton's gotten back, and I think they finished with the 1 seed. I think Brooklyn probably ends up with the 2 seed. Kevin Durant's just too good to not eventually start taking over more. I thought James Harden had – I know he's used to being the playmaker and the creator, but given the lack of success he's been able to have with the new style of play, I think Kevin Durant, when – when it gets later in the season and he sees how things are trending, I think he's just going to start taking over more. And that he's one of the best three players in the league, and he's just an automatic bucket, so you can't go wrong with having that. So, but I think the Bulls are comfortably going to be a top three seed in the East.
And this would be the segment of the show, guys, where we do something like a weekend wagers type thing. We were doing a show called Bold Statements, Not So Bold Predictions, where we were giving you guys some gambling bets that we liked. And unfortunately, there's like two lines out right now. The Bulls are one of those lines. So let's talk about that for a minute. The Bulls are currently 4.5 point favorites over the Nuggets. I guessed it'd be about 5.5. You guessed about 6. They opened at 5. So that feels about right. I do like that, but I don't like it enough to actually place a wager in real life on it. How about you?
Oh, I'm not there either. If we had bets, I was going to run with a Warriors-Bulls parlay just because I wanted to tie the Bulls into it. And I was probably going to put the Suns in there because they're playing the Spurs. I think the Suns are going to be looking for some revenge. The Spurs are right. They've been playing, you know, really good basketball, but I think the Suns are going to get right back on track. And then the Cavaliers, Evan Mobley's had at least two blocks, I think, in like 6 or 7 straight games. I think that's pretty much a lock for him to get at least two, or maybe I would look at the numbers and try and find see what it was if he got 3 or 4. And if you could get pretty decent odds on that, maybe just throw a couple dollars on that because he's so long and he challenges the most shots in the league. So it's never a bad bet when you have a guy who's like 7'3" with that kind of wingspan challenging the most shots in the league to get a few blocks.
Yeah, if you guys are a part of the Wager Pass, there's been quite a few Evan Mobley lines thrown out here in the last week or so. There's been threes also. He's been hitting threes recently at a pretty good rate. So there's been a few of those as well. But guys, what we do, the reason we're plugging this is because we want to let you know that whatever you bet on, where you place your bets is just as important, if not more important, than what bets you're putting down. That's why you need to go with the best, the most trustworthy, and a sportsbook with the best odds. You need to go with MyBookie. If you sign up and enter the promo code HOOPBALL, that's HOOPBALL, you get your first deposit matched halfway up to your first $1,000. That means if you put in $1,000, you get an extra $500, guys, and you get to go play with that money. But, Trey, man, we had no plan for this show, and I feel like it went pretty decently. I hope hope people enjoy listening to it. Talked a little bit about Bulls past, talked a little bit about Bulls present. I guess we'll have to hit Bulls future. Hit all three ghosts for the Christmas Carol special. But no, it was fun, man. I hope everyone enjoyed it out there. I am Keith Cork. You can find me on Twitter currently at BSBPKeith. And Trey, where can the people find you?
At Final Finally.
So go follow us on Twitter, fellas and gals, and all you Bulls fans, and we will keep rocking it here. And hey, man, go Bulls, go beat those Nuggets.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.